Good morning, and welcome to everyone to the second meeting of the Technology and Equipment Committee of the SHIC. As I usually do, I'd like to just have each of our SHIC members present, and our SHIC member on the phone will identify themselves, and then we'll identify the staff in attendance. And then I will cover Executive Order 46, which governs all activities which will occur today. And I see we have a representative from the Attorney General's office to keep us honest, and you're welcome. So, my name is Dr. Chris Ulrich. I'm a private practice radiologist in Charlotte and an at-large member. I am chair of this committee and of the SHIC Council as a whole.
Dick Akers. I'm a private practice ophthalmology in Gastonia, North Carolina, and I'm an at-large member.
Prashant Patel, internist, diabetologist here in Cary Hospital. Physician representative.
Kelly Hollis, representing business and industry. I work for RTI International and RTP.
And I'm Trey Adams. I represent small business here in Raleigh. Work for the London Group.
And Dr. Moore.
Yes, sir. On the telephone, Jeff Moore, orthopedic surgeon from Moorhead City. I'm an at-large member.
Thank you very much. Now we'll do the staff introductions. I'll start with Paige to my right. We'll go around the table and then around the wall.
Paige Bennett, planner.
Kelly Fisk, administrative assistant. Bethany Bergen, attorney general's office.
Greg Yakubowski, assistant chief planner.
Tom Dixon, database manager.
Elizabeth Brown, planner.
Amy Crowder, planner.
Have I got everybody? I think so. Okay. I want to review Executive Order 46. In accordance with that order, reauthorizing the State Health Coordinating Council issued on 4 March 2014, we have certain procedures to observe before taking any action at a meeting of the SHIC or a subcommittee of the SHIC. I remind all members that it is your duty to always act in the best interests of the public without regard for your own professional, institutional, or financial interests. You should recuse yourself from voting on any matter on which you cannot meet this standard. Members of the SHIC are expected to and should confer with DHHS on any matters that come before them in the development of the SMFP. No member of the SHIC, however, may confer with any DHHS employee regarding any proposed provision of the SMFP or any proposed or pending certificate of need application in which the member has a direct conflicting professional, institutional, or financial interest, except in public meetings conducted by DHHS or the SHIC. The ethical standards for the SHIC require that each member disclose any professional or institutional interest he or she may have in any matter coming before the Technology and Equipment Committee for action at this meeting. The chair will determine if the member needs to remove himself or herself from voting on the matter in order to ensure the integrity of the actions of the Technology and Equipment Committee. The ethical standards also require that each member disclose any financial benefit he or she may derive from any matter coming before Technology and Equipment Committee for action at this meeting. In the event that such a financial benefit from a matter becomes apparent, the member shall recuse himself or herself from voting on the matter. The term financial benefit is defined in Executive Order Number 46, which each of the members has reviewed. I will now pause for a moment to allow any of the members to review the matters on the agenda and to make these determinations. Are there any members of the committee who desire to recuse themselves from voting on any matter on today's agenda? I see no recusals. The minutes of this meeting shall reflect all disclosures and recusals made pursuant to the ethical standards, and such minutes will be provided to the governor for review with the SMFP. I remind the members that if any items of business come before the council today that are not on the agenda, the disclosure requirements still apply. In addition, if in the course of deliberations an interest or benefit becomes apparent that you had not previously disclosed, you should advise the chair before the Technology and Equipment Committee takes action on that matter. Seeing no indication for a need to recuse, we will move on to the first item of business, which is a motion to approve the minutes of our April 22nd, 2015 meeting.
So
moved. And seconded. Are there any revisions or amendments to those minutes that need to be made? I assume the one correction was made. Okay. There was an editorial correction made between the first and second posting. Hearing none, all those in favor of adoption, say aye.
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 Any opposed? So the minutes are adopted. At our last meeting, we suspended action on the Chapter 9 MRI report and the petition on the J. Arthur Dosier Memorial Hospital to allow time for additional CHIC member discussion and possible refining of a proposed amendment. The way I'm going to treat this for just the purposes of action is to start back with the agency proposal, and then we will consider the amendment in order. And then, depending on the action of on the amendment, we will then proceed to vote on the petition as is or as amended. So, Paige, if you would review the petition and the agency report for a new MRI policy by J. Arthur Dosier Memorial Hospital.
Okay. So we received two comments, two against the original petition and two comments from the petitioner and 32 letters of support. The request from J. Arthur Dosier Memorial Hospital requests the following policy adjustment and change to the methodology in the 2016 State Medical Facilities Plan regarding magnetic resonance imaging equipment. This includes adding a new policy, TE2, and I'd like to pause here and say that that's not to be confused with the original vote that we took in April for the intraoperative MRI, but this is before that took place. But as an alternative to the addition of proposed policy TE2, to change the MRI need determined methodology by adding steps 13 or 14 to the methodology. So a summary of the agency report. There are two fixed MRI machines in the county and one mobile machine. The number of procedures performed in Brunswick County service area in the 2015 SMFP is 62.3% of the number of procedures needed to generate a need for a new MRI machine. Dosier performed 22.5 of the adjusted procedure total, or 1,246 weighted procedures. The petitioner performed fewer than the number of procedures to meet the threshold for a need determination of one machine in a county without an existing MRI, fixed MRI, which is 1,716 weighted procedures. Also, the petitioner requests in the proposed language that the threshold tier of adjusted MRI scans for such a replacement shall equal that of a service area with no MRI scanners. This proposed change would require an applicant to meet the minimum threshold of 1,716 weighted procedures for zero fixed MRI scanners. The current threshold for the Brunswick service area is 4,118, the threshold for two fixed scanners. If this policy were approved, the lower threshold requirement with the condition that MRI services must be offered full-time has the potential of being perceived as inequitable treatment. For example, certain facilities that have higher utilization than the petitioner, for example, those in a multi-scanner service area that are in a contract with a vendor for part-time services, would not be able to replace their contract with a fixed scanner under this policy. In addition, the wording of the policy limits the type of applicants to hospitals only and not all types of facilities that provide MRI services, such as independent diagnostics centers. Finally, if this policy were to be enacted and the petitioner qualified under the conditions as they are currently written, the resulting outcome would not increase the number of fixed scanners in the Brunswick County service area. They would be replacing one machine with another, but the MRI scanner located at Dosier is a grandfathered scanner. Thus, this equipment was approved prior to the time that the requirement for a certificate of need for MRI scanners came into effect. The vendor will be able to locate the equipment in any other service area in the state. Thus, while it may not necessarily increase the inventory in the petitioner's county, it would increase the overall statewide inventory and has the potential to be placed in another health service area that already has excess capacity. So given the available information and the comments, the agency recommended denial of the petition. That concludes it.
Thank you, Paige. Let me just say that let's go ahead and hear the petition, the amendment to the petition, which Trey has proposed and has undergone some refinement. We did receive yesterday an alternative proposal from another planner, which is not eligible to be published because it is too late to circulate within the public process, but contained an alternative approach that might or might not have merit, but doesn't have the ability to be examined thoroughly from a petition point of view. Petition review point of view, but it does raise the question about what does it take to get the policy right, and but I'm not going to discuss that input at this point. So let's read the current draft of the amendment, which I will then let Trey speak to, and then we'll go on to further discussion.
Okay. Draft Policy TE3, Certificate of Need for Fixed MRI Scanners in Community Hospitals. A Certificate of Need may be issued to a hospital licensed under General Statute 131E, Article 5, without regard to the MRI need shown in Chapter 9, Magnetic Resonance Imaging, provided that the Certificate of Need application demonstrates the following. Number 1, the hospital currently contracts for MRI services with an unrelated vendor. Number 2, the hospital performed a minimum of 858 weighted MRI scans in the 12 months immediately prior to the submission of the Certificate of Need application. Number 3, the hospital demonstrates that it will perform at least 1,716 weighted MRI scans during the third year of operation following the completion of the project. Number 4, the existing MRI service will be terminated once the new fixed MRI scanner begins service. And number 5, the hospital demonstrates that acquisition of an MRI scanner by the facility will reduce the hospital's cost of providing MRI services, which will be passed on to patients and third-party payers in the form of lower charges. That concludes.
Thank you. This was, I'll let Trey speak to this, but there were a number of exchanges to try to refine this since the last meeting, trying to get to a policy that might meet a need but not create other unintended consequences. Trey, you're on.
Sure. So the background of this was I worked with the planning staff and Paige and Shelley and Greg. Thank you very much for your help in providing feedback to try to get to something that recognizes the need, a deficit of need in community hospitals for MRI services that may be more cost effective. The idea was that it would, the way this is written, it's set in such a way that you're going to have an established volume to be able to apply for this certificate of need. And then the benchmarks for the CON side of things were set in such a way that in hopefully, you know, by the time you apply for your CON thing, 4 years, your volume would grow at a reasonable rate that you could hit this benchmark and be financially feasible. So the goal was to hopefully decrease hospital costs, increase access to patients, hopefully through lower charges by them being able to buy a lower cost service, and also not flood the system or allow folks that may not have the volume to be financially feasible at this point in time. We went through a number of renditions on this policy back and forth to try to smooth this thing so it helps community hospitals and doesn't open Pandora's box. We did receive another comment on this last night that had another version of it, as Dr. Olick mentioned. and just haven't had time to analyze how that could affect this policy yet. That's where we are.
Thank you, Trey. As you've heard me say in the past, I'm very wary of making policy kind of on the fly. And I'm very much a proponent of having an ample opportunity for all proposals to be thoroughly vetted and either unexpected outcomes identified, or even with good intention, or inadvertently creating a situation that we just hadn't contemplated by this policy. This policy, as proposed, actually missed the first cycle of comment, but it was based on the notion that the proposal that was made in the first policy was not in itself going to be acceptable. It is my view that this needs more massaging, and whether the information that was supplied to us gives us an avenue to pursue, was received far too late to begin to properly vet it. But I don't believe anyone on this committee doesn't think that a solution needs to be found to address these critical care access hospital issues. I told Trey yesterday that I had some doubt that Dozier could get to 17-16 in 3 years, given their demographics and current growth rates across the state, but I hope I'm wrong. But it could be hard in an application to demonstrate that. The issue of lower charges, while well-intentioned, may in fact not also be very demonstrable in an application that would have to be filed. And we have no standard for how much lower, what our expectation of lower means. Is it $1.50 lower? Is it 50? We just don't even, as far as I know, we have no standard for what that means. And I've had a number of people tell me that that's a requirement, which in reality is an unenforceable, well-intentioned but unenforceable statement. What I will commit, what I believe should happen, there are two things I believe we should do. My personal belief is we should take more time to do the policy. My second belief is that the petition as proposed is unacceptable. I do believe there is an avenue for a special need petition to be filed in August. We may end up having several filed. Based on the discussions that have occurred, I can't predict what people are willing to do. But I think the staff has a much clearer understanding of the nature of the problems we're trying to deal with. That petition, by the way, will come back to this committee. So it is not a case that you won't have the opportunity to see where we are in August. I've also committed to Trey, recognizing his goodwill and desire, that the discussion on this issue should continue. And I welcome suggestions from the planning community, other data, other thoughts about how one might or might not craft a policy longer term. But I don't believe we have it right in its present form today. And that's just my personal belief. Trey believes, I think, a little more passionately that we're close to right. And I am thankful for his enthusiasm and his push on this. And I'm also very confident that he won't let me forget this. And that's okay, because at the end of the day, one of our charges is to get it right. Yes, sir.
May I say something? Trey, I applaud your work. We're all trying to get it right. I just happened to have an article here that somehow pertains to the issue at hand, and somehow it doesn't. It's from Dr. Tulkawande, who writes in The New Yorker. Can anybody on this committee tell me how many either CT or MRI scans are done in the U.S. annually? And we're not going to be any different in North Carolina in terms of the prevalence, I mean, generically speaking. We have 300 million people in the U.S. How many either CT or MRI scans are done in the United States?
Too many.
I mean, just venture a guess. Is it 10 million? Is it 50 million?
100 million.
it's 100 million.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, one-third of our population is under age 20, which would hardly need a CTR MRI. There are cases, brain, you know, tumors, things like that. That means we're doing one CTR MRI scan for literally every adult in the U.S. But that doesn't mean that a hospital that has to ship patients from their hospital over to a outpatient center shouldn't have an MRI. I mean, you know, we're living in, you know, the 21st century. So clearly, Docher has a strong case for having an MRI on site, and we have to find a pathway. The only question is, should there be a policy change that will possibly continue the existing MRI machines in place and only add to that? And the other thing I would ask our committee members and staff to think about, and I don't know the answer to this, is that when we mandate an X number of scans, whether it's CT scans, MRI scans, or surgeries, aren't we actually enhancing the utilization or overutilization of services that in many ways can be handled otherwise? A classic example is the orthopedic arena. I don't want to belabor this too much, but we have way too many arthroscopic knee surgeries in patients in whom the studies show it is not indicated. This is well documented in studies. Now, I don't want to, you know, press on any toes today or anything like that in creating a larger conversation, but clearly the Docher example is a very unique example, and we have to find pathways for any and all community or the hospitals that are shipping patients that might be inpatient through an ambulance over. I mean, that's above and beyond. And the question is, you know, a policy change, will it result in more services? And the data suggests yes. When we already have 100 million, that's all. And this is annually in the U.S. alone. And those monies, when utilized, take away and add to the deductibles, this, that, and the other thing, are the very patients that we're trying to help pay their costs and the business industry as well, because it ends up being a higher premium, nothing's for free. And so I really applaud your work, because what you're proposing is pretty darn impressive, really, frankly, from just, you know, just looking at it in black and white. But I think there are other ways of handling this particular petition.
I have a question.
Sure.
It says here that there's a grandfathered fixed MRI already at Docher. What does that mean?
I'm not going to call the Docher people, but it's located 4 miles from their physical building.
Okay. That's the one that
has to. It is owned by Alliance, and it is a grandfathered unit that can be relocated at the owner's discretion.
So it's not at the hospital.
It's not physically at the hospital. Okay. One of the potential outcomes of the, and my crystal ball is cloudy, but once Docher has the ability to potentially purchase its own, I believe that will also level the negotiating discussion about what makes business sense, and they will decide between them what it is. It's not for us to solve each business problem. This was the object of was probably a poor business decision made many, 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 many years ago, and you shouldn't be tied to a bad decision forever. To echo Dr. Patel's commentary, and it is not the mission of the SHIC to regulate the number of procedures. What I will say is that I believe through the CON process we actually have a more modest utilization rate than those states that are unregulated. And that typically what we receive is what I call the I wear a utilization management hat in another life, and I'm working on installing what's called imaging clinical decision support to help begin to build data as well as to guide people. That you often get what I call the micro-macro argument. That is, the unit price will drop, but the unit utilization rate skyrockets. And from a budgetary point of view, that is, your insurance premium, your state government budget. In fact, in many cases, what will happen is the micro is true, but the utilization rate swamps the savings and the macro budget stress actually goes up. And the proof in the pudding, a little bit of the, and it's hard to get data to prove this dramatically, but many, if North Carolina were having overtly very much more expensive medicine because of restriction, then we should be one of the highest cost states in the country. We are, in fact, in the middle of the pack on average spending costs. We have more integrated healthcare systems than many parts of the country. And they are aggressively starting to focus on it. So I think if we look at our data, for instance, for MR utilization as an example, there is virtually no growth in radiology-owned imaging centers or hospital facilities. The growth is almost entirely in the physician office-based side of the system when you go through those tables. There, you know, and that speaks a little bit to what you were referring to with knee arthroscopy. I don't impute bad intention as much as if it's there and it's handy, it gets used. And so you that's just human nature. The indications expand to fill the available schedule. Maybe that's a way to put it, kind of like work expands to fill the time allocated for its completion, one of those old-timey rules. But now we're far afield and we're off the business of the vote we have to take.
Okay.
One other question. Yes,
please do. So what you were saying about special needs petition, if we approve it and they have the opportunity to purchase their own, and it improves the competition.
Bear in mind, I'm not promising it will be
no,
approved.
No. Absolutely. No, but I'm just trying to sort of wait. So I saw two issues. One is sort of being held hostage or a lack of competition to bring the costs down. So if they have the opportunity to purchase their own, then it gives them a little bit more bargaining power with the vendor, right?
They could either just, they and the vendor could decide that it's in their mutual interest to solve this without going through a purchase cycle. They may not.
So my question is, so the other issue is a question of location and having the MRI services available at the hospital versus 4 miles away, right? So the competition doesn't solve that problem. Is there, as part of the negotiation, is it possible that MRI, the vendor could relocate the MRI?
I would view that as anything less than that as a failure of the negotiation.
Okay, that was
personally. Yeah, if it isn't at the hospital, it doesn't solve what I believe is the fundamental problem.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I just want to clarify something. While Dozier would meet the requirements of this, my intention was, when I read, you know, this is more of a global, is this better health policy for, in general, the goal of this policy, and if the committee feels we're not there yet, I want to do it once, do it right. I think one of my biggest issues with prior petitions is how pigeonholed they are. And while I understand why that has been done in the past, the goal of this was to do something that was good, was set up for the broader good of the state of North Carolina. We're not there yet, fine, because let's do it right, as Dr. Olick says. I didn't like Dozier's petition. This really came out in my mindset from last meeting when I read Cape Fear Valley's in contrast to Dozier's. I was like, oh, I think we got an issue here. The goal of this is to look for the Dozier's, the Bladen counties, Hope County, St. Luke's, you know, these smaller community hospitals. So I don't want this to seem, I think there's an impression that this was sort of crafted and drafted towards Dozier. I found a lot of faults in Dozier's petition, and I think the comments from the other folks allowed me to see a greater issue. So right. I just wanted to clarify that. This is, the goal of this petition is not to help Dozier. It's to, does this policy globally affect better planning in the state and allow smaller community hospitals to provide better care to the residents of North Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to clarify that because
right.
The discussion seemed pointed to Dozier.
Correct. correct. And in fact, one of the things we have done in the background is I have asked staff, and I also received input, part of the input received yesterday also attempted to categorize how many facilities in North Carolina actually share this characteristic issue without necessarily determining whether they want to change, but just to identify them. Depending on where you draw the lines, it appears to me that there are no more than eight. There may only be six. But again, I think that's part of doing due diligence. We're probably going to have to interview each of those hospitals to understand their local nature, their hospital CEO or CFO, as part of that due diligence down the road. But it's not a large number in the Pantheon, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't address it. It means that we need to identify what it is and figure out what's needed. And we're out of time in this cycle to do that, in my opinion.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, one thing.
Yes, sir.
When it comes to value-based medicine for our committee members, in the Medicare arena, what's being visited is a site-neutral payment. What that means is whether Dr. Patel is a private practitioner or whether he is under the tax ID of a hospital in the same location, not a different location. I can be 50 miles away from the hospital, but today I'm under the hospital. Medicare will pay 70 to 80% more for that exact same visit.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. So what can the unintentional consequences of small community hospitals that might not, again, the acute patient, I understand, that's heart-wrenching, you know, you're lying flat in a hospital, you need an MRI. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the ambulatory MRIs. If there's a shift of those ambulatory MRIs to the hospital scenario, unless we have a site-neutral payment plan in place for MRIs, which we do not, the government's not, they may be thinking about it, but they haven't talked about it, then what can happen is the existing MRIs that are done at one-third the price, the reverse being, are done at triple the price. And MRIs are $1,000 even in the outpatient setting, if not greater, outpatient meaning the non-hospital setting. In the hospital, that would be, as Dr. Ulrich was kind of saying, that you could have one either overutilization or really a higher cost, that same one test is now ending up being, and I'm talking about the paid rate, I'm not talking about bill rates, three times.
Medicare pays three times as much for the same service.
Medicare pays greater for
the
MRIs.
This is an extremely arcane argument that also hinges on the fact that hospitals are paid under something called the Hospital Outpatient Prospective Payment Plan, which is a cost input model, not a RVU valued model like physicians.
Right. Yeah.
So if we look, and if we look, there's several things that happen with that. One is that the costs which are submitted are maximum costs in that process. They have been given 3 to 4% incremental increases since 2000. Physicians are net negative to inflation since 2000. With the SGR repeal bill, physicians will see 0.5% incremental increases in July this year and then yearly starting next January for 4 years. No one believes inflation is 0.5%. So what this has done, for instance, is led to many cardiology groups selling themselves to hospitals because of this differential payment model. Now, I think between ACO modeling, bundled payments, this drive by Secretary Burwell to have 80% of purchasing for Medicare by 2018 under a value model, and that neutral site of service, which is in the congressional hopper. I don't know where that equals, but I believe at some place the point that equalization number in defense of the hospital, unlike an imaging center, since I sit on both sides, the imaging center's overhead is substantially lower than the hospital's to provide the same service, and it relates to the staffing model, the expense of the buildings, you can get down a whole list of things. So if it just comes on raw dollars, Mr. Outpatient Center can win every day. But it's a continuing issue. But unfortunately, it's not a Schick issue directly. But what I will say, and I mentioned earlier, growth, if you go through our tables and you look at hospital-based systems, whether we look at the small hospitals or we look at even the Dukes of this world, incremental growth in MR imaging is actually very low for the last several years. And so I'm not terribly concerned whether they're going to do four more or four less when you have a payer mix of Medicaid, Medicare, a third uninsured, maybe less now under healthcare.gov. There's not a lot of margin whether you go up or down a couple. In fact, one of the questions I asked their CFO was, how are you going to staff this at a rate that isn't going to eat your overhead? You know, essentially eat you with overhead. He came back with a pro forma model. No offense, but I think you're an optimist on that. But, it's a struggle. Those folks are struggling to keep physicians in the community under these models, let alone have somebody, you know, for the most part. So I hear you loud and clear. I don't know how we deal with that as a schick, other than to say I think the state, one of the bright spots about CON is I think the state has suffered far less from that than some other states that I'm familiar with. We have no Medicaid mills. We have no, and I think that's a direct result of the CON regime that we've lived with, which never makes everybody happy. But it has, in fact, served a purpose which I believe is positive, and I've told my legislators that as they've considered alternatives. So anyway, now we've had a philosophical tour de force. We have looked at the macroeconomics of federal health policy and its trickle down to the state. We all have recognized that there are a lot of forces in play that none of us control, which are going to set prices in a manner. But our job at the end of the day is make sure facility and access and quality are part of what is available to the people of North Carolina. So I'm going to call, hearing no more pertinent discussion about the amendment. If you vote yes, it is to adopt the amendment. If you vote no, it is to not adopt the amendment today, and we will continue this discussion, seeking input and see what we can develop that we can be confident about. If we have something that looks good for our fall meeting, although it cannot be adopted at the fall meeting, I will certainly put it out there to at least let people take it, you know, get a look at it and take a shot at it.
Can you review what we need to do to TRAES to make it better and acceptable?
The answer is I don't believe we have the time, nor do I have the public comment period to do another modification and appropriately go through the policy cycle.
It's not basically it's just the time frame.
Well, we don't have an appropriate time. I believe it's currently written. It's not going to get us where we need to go. I recognize the good intention. He recognized, you know, I'm very confident he made that proposal with the best of intentions. But one of my duties as chair is to help guide the committee to understand that we have both the process to go through and we need the opportunity to have everybody see the proposal, comment on it, refine it, and move forward. And I'm not happy with either vehicle going out for the summer in its present form to achieve that, but we will continue to have those discussions, and maybe we can show something that looks a little better come fall. But we're talking about the 2017 plan for a policy. Special needs petitions are due in August for anyone who is interested. We will deal with each one on its merits. I think people have outlined some of the sense of what they would like to see in such a successful petition. And I'll await what happens next. But my suggestion is that for this year, try the special need model while we work away on this other model, which quite honestly may not be to the satisfaction of the original applicant at the end of the day. I'm just not sure what it should look like yet. But I also recognize, and Trey has outlined very clearly, there is a need. We have a small number of affected hospitals. Many of them are in our least economically prosperous counties. Some of them are there for historical reasons. Some of them have a community that's very proud. If you follow the dispute over Mpungo between East Carolina and the Belhaven community, I think one of the things you can take away is there is community pride, and there are fiscal realities, and in that particular case, they can't seem to agree on where all that comes together. And I have no judgment about others say that it's a dramatic example of an ongoing dispute in which so far I see no winners. I only see losers from 30,000 feet up. So I wish they had been able to get together more judiciously. But it's an example of where we're at. People passionately want their hospital. There are limits to what those hospitals can and cannot do well. There are limits to the fiscal, their fiscal ability to manage their operations. So, but Schick doesn't manage operations. So, but I'm perfectly willing to look at it, whether or not we can make them more financially viable with different arrangements over time. That's part of access. If they're not in business, it's the old no margin, no mission. If you can't get to a break-even margin, you can't keep the doors open. We've seen examples of that across the state as well. So I take that seriously. So the answer is good. I have the intentions are good. I don't have the vehicle, I feel, to move the intention where I want to go.
So we're aiming for 2017.
If we were to make a change as a policy, not as a petition. A petition received in August would go into the 2016 plan. As a policy change, like the IMRI policy, that would have to wait to 2017 if we wanted to create a policy that automatically qualified a petitioner to go directly to the CON section based on the policy. And quite honestly, I think we also need to talk with our CON section about what is administrable from their perspective in terms of crafting such a policy so that while we have a policy, if they can't administer it, then we have a problem as well. So I want to get our ducks in a row. And so I don't want anyone to feel this is a quashing of a solution as much as to recognize it is a Gordian knot that we need to solve, and our knife isn't quite sharp enough yet. And that's kind of where I am with it. And as I say, I'm very confident that my friend Trey will keep this issue alive for me to consider. Well, I don't have intention of forgetting it, but should I fall off the time track, I know he will let me recall. So I think that's all good. Just like I think at the August meeting, we will review the conversion. Remember last year our discussion about conversion of fixed to mobile MRI. I will ask the CON section to at least briefly indicate what applications they received, which I think are due July 1st, if my memory serves me. That will just, as an information item, we will convey back to you who did and who didn't step up to the plate with that idea and try to understand whether or not that gets us where we're
trying
to go.
Trying to see an August meeting here.
I see the August, September. We may be in late. I think actually it's September. Yeah.
Okay.
Was it September? What date is it? 7th?
16th.
Okay. Ours went the 16th. No, it can't be in August. I'm away. So, and I'm not going to dial in. But at whatever our fall meeting is, that's where we will present this as the, as an update. That's directly at Trey's request, and I intend to honor that. So coming back to the actually conducting business, what we have is what I'm treating as an amendment to the petition that was filed. If you vote yes, you are voting to substitute this policy for the petitioner's proposal. If you vote no, then we will return to the original petition and either vote that up or down. On the merits of that, since this was offered as an amendment, a substitute essentially, to the petition that was recommended for denial by the agency. You look like you got a question.
Well, I'm just trying to understand the vote. So voting yes just replaces this,
this would become
petition.
A substitute for the petition.
But it still is not voting on a policy.
No, you will have voted for this as policy. It's a proposed as a policy. But the effect would be, the two effects, I guess you could do two things. You could vote yes, make it the substitute, and then vote no if you didn't want the policy to go forward.
That's where I was sort of...
But my suggestion is, don't amend the policy, then deal with the petition, and that would be the more orderly way to go at this point in time. Further discussion.
Just ask for clarification that we're on the same page.
We're on the same page. Okay, we all understand. Okay. So, I'm going to accept that this has been seconded since we held it over. We essentially voted to hold it over. I'm going to accept that it's seconded and ready to vote. So, a vote yes is to accept the substitute, the vote no is to not accept this policy today. And then we'll move on with trying to get a policy which is more focused to the solution, hopefully. But that won't happen at today's meeting. And then we'll come back and deal with the original petition itself. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those in favor of rejection of the policy as written signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Was that an aye, Trey?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've elected to further refinement. Returning now to the original petition, the agency recommendation was for rejection of the original petition. So a vote yes is to accept the agency's recommendation for denial. A vote no would be to approve the petition. Everybody clear on that?
And Mr. Chairman, just in case people are not clear, that Dozier has the ability to file a special petition for the 2016
Correct.
Planning year.
Planning year meeting. This does not impact.
Yeah.
This does not impact.
So in August, by August, they still have opportunity to file for an MRI.
What's the application date? September. Does anyone have that handy?
September.
No, it's August something.
No.
September?
July 20th.
Whatever.
29th.
July 20th. Whatever the application date is posted.
It's the last public hearing here in Raleigh.
Yeah, whatever it is, that's the date to file the petition.
July 29th.
So July 29th, as a matter of record, is the
5 p.m.
The 5 p.m. at the agency. I suggest you don't wait till the 29th, but the 28th works great. But in any event, that's the special need petition filing date. And anyone else who's interested in that, that's their date as well. The staff will then analyze those in August for our September discussion. Going forward. So, in the convoluted manner of yes is no and no is yes, the agency motion is for denial. So a vote yes is to deny the petition. Everybody clear on that? Okay. All those voting yes on the agency recommendation say aye.
Aye.
Yes, aye.
Any, and aye, Jeff votes for it. Any nays? The petition is rejected. Thank you very much. See, we have plenty of time for discussion today. Paige, let's move on to the long-running discussion of CPT terminology codes. And we're going to discuss this for both MRI and for linear accelerators. Our action item will be, after reviewing this, is to vote to proceed on the two recommendations, and I will treat them as separate, that is MRI and linear accelerator, in terms of voting.
Okay. Tom, could you pull up, please? Yes. A number of years ago, before I was on staff here, the committee and the SHIC had begun the process of concurrently collecting data. And what you're looking at on your screen here is the page from the hospital license renewal application. And you can see, and this is for the, I'm sorry, this is for the MRIs. And you can see here, up here is where we collect the data for the, that we actually use in the methodology for the MRIs. You can see that we weight without contrast, and then there's inpatient and outpatient procedures. Several years ago, the committee had asked that we start collecting CPT code data that essentially corresponds with the totals here. And this is actually only the first page of, I think, three that show CPT codes. So I know it's at least 3 or 4 years that they've been concurrently doing this. And so what Tom and I actually did was we wanted to take a look to see if the numbers that we're collecting here, these totals, actually, how closely do they match these totals as a potential for us considering to move forward with just using CPT codes for our methodology versus separating out the procedures. And Tom, can you pull up the summary chart? This summary chart was provided to you in some of the online documentation. No. So what you're seeing is we took a look at the last three SMFPs from 2013 through 2015, and on your left here are the procedures that were on the top of the screen that we used in the methodology, and on the right is what we calculated to be the CPT totals for that area, and these are all by county. And I'm sorry, it's rather small. And maybe if you want to zoom in, we can. But we found that essentially the percent difference between the procedures and the CPT2 code totals in every instance was less than 5%. So in 2013, it was 2.3%. In the 2013 SMFP, it was 2.3%. 2014 was negative 2.6%. And in 2015, it was just a slightly over negative 3% difference. So essentially, we wanted to be able to verify that, which I think there is a very negligible difference between the two and what we collect. And with that, that's what we have for a CPT code
present. So the history of this is that we currently count procedures which have a fuzzier definition than billing codes which have strict definitions. In addition, virtually every provider has CPT code data that they need for their billing that's easily obtainable, whereas procedures require a separate calculation. So our notion has been, and this comes out of a work group that is actually now probably 6 or 7 years old, that we look at this and switch to CPT code data, which is easier to report. It's also a little bit harder to fudge because of the definitions of what you can bill for. In some cases, it may underestimate or slightly overestimate. As you look at some of these numbers, they pop up and down. I'm not sure I understand why they do. The trend line is slightly negative, but a rounding error in the big picture of county by county. But I would like to entertain a motion for the 2016 plan that we only collect CPT code data for MRI and put that out for the last round of public discussion.
Mr. Chairman, before we vote, if I may, why is there a huge difference, Paige? Would you know in Mecklenburg County, 9,000?
Well, so there are some potential. It has to do with some of the sites not actually providing CPT code data to us. We actually have some duplicate reporting issues. Mm-hmm. So some of the hospitals, for example, report CPT codes, and then if they have another vendor that comes in, we get CPT codes. So it's not very, at times, depending on the situation, very clean data, but sometimes we don't always, one is reporting CPT codes, and sometimes they aren't able to provide them to us, or don't provide them to us.
So is there something that can be done to narrow the gap, to know some relative closer, you know, have true utilization data? I mean, Wake County is just as large as Mecklenburg County, and there's hardly a difference.
I mean, we can certainly focus, when we send out the registration inventory forms, that tends to be really where we're not getting the CPT data, code data. Almost all the hospitals report CPT code data. The difference, my guess, would be in some of the vendors that don't provide it for us for different sites. We could certainly focus attentions on that. And there are discrepancies. The other tricky thing was
actually in 2015, it's similar. Actually, yes. I take it back. So maybe there were just.
Now we've had the same problem with procedures, attributing them correctly, double reporting. I think the key to it is that problem doesn't entirely go away.
Right.
True.
That in those counties where there are more mobile providers, sometimes at physician offices, sometimes at hospital sites, some of the data can get a little bit confusing. But as I say, we've had the same procedure issue. We also had an incident some years ago, I won't name names, where a vendor in the state was essentially reporting a very high number of procedures, because on every MR of the lumbar spine, they also billed a thoracic spine based on having the lowest 2 to 4 thoracic vertebrae. No one else in the state happened to follow that aggressive billing convention. But they reported astounding numbers of scans or procedures. And how do we, if you looked at the CPT code data, it became abundantly clear instantly why they were an outlier. Now, I'm not going to judge on whether that was good practice, bad practice, but only to say that they were an outlier in that practice. So I think from a standpoint of apples to apples, CPT code intrinsically is more reliable. We will continue to have some data attribution issues, but I can tell you that various analysts are happy to report to us their view on those issues, or when the particular reporting institution is contacted, they have sometimes voluntarily said, oops, and, made a submitted correction. I don't think that goes away. I think Paige still has a job making those calls. But and just like if you see shifts from one year to another, just, huge volume shifts, first thing you're going to say is why? There's got to be the trend lines don't change that rapidly. Why have you suddenly reported a very different number? So, that has always been an issue for us. But I would dearly like to put the squishy definition of what a procedure is away and go with something that at least has comparability across all reporting sites. And if we see a site that looks to be vastly too high, or for that matter too low, generally too low hasn't been as big an issue, you have at least some ability to analyze why the discrepancy from comparable sites might be present. And it's lower cost to collect, quite honestly, because you got to have it anyway. Did that satisfactorily answer the question?
Yeah.
So to vote yes is to essentially put out for public comment and likely adoption CPT code submission will become the standard for MRI starting in 2016. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Dr. Moore?
Yes, sir. But I would have a comment.
Yes, sir.
That I'll make after I assume the vote's been taken.
Yes, sir. You please make a comment.
Whenever I look at these tables, one of my first thoughts is to look to my current location,
mm-hmm.
because I'm familiar with the volumes and the milieu of services here. And I live in Carteret County, and I look at this chart, and I see that. In Carteret County, there was a substantial increase in the reported number of MRI procedures in 2015, and I would kind of question that. But if you look at the differential between the number of procedures reported and the CPT codes, it's dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas, what Dr. Patel was saying with regard to the easily identifiable outlaying. Data that I would like to certainly have some affirmative process of trying to square that with reality.
Ms. Page,
if we accept that data for Carteret County, that's going to very much skew whatever our next year plan is.
Sure. Ms. Page is making a note, and she will respond to both of us. Fair enough?
Yes.
So we've had the same problem with procedures going out of whack as well. So anytime any member of this committee sees data that does not seem to make sense, please let the staff know and copy me on it so I'm aware that you have a concern. And we will find an answer. So, again, we're back to the, we've adopted CPT code for MRI. Now we're going to talk about, I believe, radiation oncology or linear accelerators, which has the, currently is done in a abstraction called ESDVs.
So this is a little bit different than what we do with MRIs. We don't collect concurrent data for linear accelerators. However, we do collect it by CPT code as well. And this is the copy of the registration and inventory form that outlines the CPT codes that we collect. So in my discussions with Dr. Ulrich, one of the challenges with this particular data is that out of the two data sets, I get a lot of corrections to the CPT codes. And I'm not entirely sure that we actually have a full updated code set that is the most recent codes, and like I said, and the complete code set. So we wanted to include that in this discussion while we were talking about CPT codes for MRIs. And that concludes.
Paige, could you, how many years of data do you have that you can back test versus collecting data going forward?
Well, we don't actually, we only collect the CPT codes for this. There would be no comparison. We don't, so we don't actually have procedures versus CPT codes. We only use the CPT codes in the methodology.
Mm-hmm. And so is the challenge from your point of view asking for public comment on the adequacy of the CPT code set?
Yes.
And not asking for CPT codes?
It is potentially that there are, it is not a full set of codes, and there are conflicting codes that hospitals have given me when they've scratched in the margin in this. Updated codes or things that may be missing from this form, sometimes it's even conflicting. So I think it's what we're looking for, or what I'm looking for, is whether or not this is an adequate code set, and if the codes need to be updated.
So our motion should be to put this code set out for public comment.
Yes.
To make sure that we have the correct set of codes that meet current practice.
So moved.
Second. Dr. Patel. Oh, I got two. Trey, we'll give Trey that one. He gets the second on that one. I don't anticipate that we will make any change in the actual methodology, but I am concerned that we have data problems at this point that we need to correct before we start tinkering with anything else. All those, hearing no comments, all those in favor of adopting the motion to put the code set out for public comment and input, say aye.
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 Dr. Moore is also a yes. Very good. Now, is there any other business or philosophical concern that any member of the council wants to share at this point in time before we go to adjournment?
I just have a question about the agenda. Was there a need determination update?
Yeah, we have a linear accelerator. Sorry.
I guess, Paige, comment on the need.
Yep. Okay, so for those of you who were in attendance at the last meeting, we did have, I reported that there was a need determination for Service Area 21 for Harnett County. That was inaccurate. Can you pull up my table so they can look at the H9? Essentially, the database automatically calculates a need when there's not a placeholder. And so essentially, I would be adding this placeholder, which is a change from what you all looked at last time. This, with a zero here, automatically the database, because it's essentially, I can see Ms. Hollis's question. Essentially, the criteria is that in Area 21, over 125,000 generated the population, automatically generated the need. And so the database did it automatically. And so what I'm asking is for the committee to allow me to update the table to include the placeholder and then to change the need from the one in Harnett County to zero for the proposed plan. And we'll pull up the other.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Dr. Moore is an aye. I probably need to also reaffirm that the staff should continue to make updates and other modifications to the data table on a continuing basis. Trey says yay, and so he's second. By Ms. Hollis.
Aye.
Thank you for volunteering. All those in favor say aye.
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 Now, any other philosophical discussion, anything that you think we ought to be pursuing that we are not pursuing, recognizing there is only so much bandwidth at any given moment in time? Hearing none, I will declare this meeting adjourned. Thank you all for your help. Dr. Moore, thank you for dialing in today, my friend.
Thank you, Seth. Nice to hear from you.
And we'll meet again, I believe, on June 3rd in full committee to review the action of all three committees and submit the preliminary plan for public comment. You are encouraged to attend at least one public hearing if your schedule permits. It's an interesting experience. And then our committee meeting is September 16th.
Yes.
Is that the right date?
Yep.
To go over public comment, inputs, special need petitions, and other items of interest at that point in time, moving toward a completed SMFP, which I believe will meet in early October as the final plan. Thank you very much. Thanks to everyone who attended.
Thank you. Can I ask you a favor?
Yes, sir.
I'm not a computer over this. My computer gets a little bulky.
Okay.
Kelly?
This business with this Dozier Hospital, the petition, the comments, et cetera, et cetera.
Don't get too close. I'm contaminated.
Would you mind printing me up a hard copy of all that stuff?
As much as I would love to have you first.
No, no, no. Absolutely.
That'd be great.
Fine line, right?
That would be great if you could do that.
Congratulations.